This podcast is brought to you by BetRivers. Download the BetRivers app from the App Store or Google Play Store. Must be 21. Available in Ohio only. Void where prohibited. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Sports gaming is provided in partnership with Dayton Real Estate Ventures, LLC, DBA, Hollywood Gaming at Dayton Raceway.
This is the Mark Madden Unfiltered Podcast from the Bet Rivers Network.
Hello again, everybody. It's Mark Madden on the Bet Rivers Podcast Network today. Very appropriately, coming at you live from the sportsbook at the fabulous Rivers Casino on the north side of Pittsburgh. What side? North side. And before I bring on my co-host, I just want to mention a trade made by new Penguins general manager Kyle Dubas when he was in charge of Toronto. This was in 2019. Dubas traded Patrick Marleau and a first-round pick to Carolina for nothing, to clear cap space. The Penguins got a few players like that. They got contracts like that. And Marleau got, Dubas got Marleau to waive his no-movement clause. Whatever voodoo that took, I hope that Dubas remembers how to do it. Certainly a lot to talk about hockey-wise. I'm joined now by my co-host, Tim Benz. Tim, we'll talk about hockey in just a bit, but I watched game one of the NBA Finals, kind of a curiosity thing, because it's the finals, and I wanted to see Jokic in a situation like that. Jokic only took three shots in the first half, but yet finished with a triple-double. He was totally dominant even when he wasn't shooting. I think Jokic is the best player in the NBA right now. I think he's better than LeBron right now. Let me ask you this. Is he better now than LeBron was then?
No, I don't think he was.
You sure?
I'm sure. LeBron was the better player at his peak than Jokic is now, but Jokic is quite good. I could see the Nuggets playing that well. I wasn't surprised that they played that well without Jokic taking that many shots, especially in the first half, because I thought they were on the ascent when Murray was the go-to guy before he got hurt, and then they kind of changed their personality and Jokic took over. And, it's an appropriate time coming for them to be in the final.
Yeah, well, especially since they've never won, because never is a long time, too.
No, inappropriate with this era.
No. I know. It's their turn, yeah, to be sure. Did they ever win the ABA title? And shame on me for not knowing, because
I thought they did. Didn't they win it with Dan Issel once, maybe?
You used to go to Pittsburgh Condors game. Yes, that makes sense, Dan Issel. Or did Dan Issel win with the Kentucky Colonels?
That's possible. Well, what about the Tropics?
The Flint Tropics. No, all they wanted to do, Tim, was finish fourth.
That's right. Fourth was really important.
We'll vote, and then we'll fight. We'll look up to see if Denver won the ABA as the show progresses. But, Tim, the big news in...
I do have a Pittsburgh Condors T-shirt that I wear quite often, by the way. It's one of my prized possessions.
I have a Condors promotional giveaway ball, red, white, and blue.
Who was the guy in the Condors that completely went missing and people thought he was...
John Brisker.
Yeah, he was like a CIA hitman or something like that, a special operative or something.
No. He went and worked for... Idi Amin. He fought against Idi Amin as a mercenary in Africa, never came back.
Close enough. I was under the right tent.
I got to be honest, I'm surprised.
That's one of the great Pittsburgh sports stories that's never told. He just disappeared.
I saw John
Him
Brisker...
Him and Enrique Romo, right, was the other one?
I saw John Brisker play, Tim. And I'm surprised he never came back. I'm surprised he didn't win the war single-handedly. There's that great book about the American Basketball Association called Loose Balls, oral history, just quote after quote, story after story. And that was a league of fights like we saw in the movie Semi-Pro.
Mm.
Nobody wanted to fight John Brisker. That was fact number one. You know what fact number two was? At some point, somebody had to.
Then maybe Kyle Dubas should find him and get him and put him out there whenever Tom Wilson takes a run at Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, at least somebody who won't take no for an answer, because John Brisker never did. But let's move on to the Dubas hire. What's your take on the Penguins bringing him in as president of hockey ops? But I think that translates to total autonomy for assembling the roster. I thought his press briefing was just amazing.
I think it's just a change in vernacular. You know, I mean, like we always joked about, well, what does Brian Burke really do as president of hockey ops? Well, this president of hockey ops will be the GM, what we know to be the GM.
And probably drink less.
One would hope. And then I think whoever the GM is going to be basically in a glorified role in whatever their role had been as assistant GM, which I don't know why a guy like a Darsh or a Greeley or one of these other candidates.
Well, I don't think a Darsh or a Greeley would come in.
Not, it's almost a lateral move at this point.
I think they'll bring in a younger version of Dubas, like a stats nerd who thinks the same way, that can do, I don't want to say busy work, because that would minimize the role, but maybe it is busy work.
They could get a guy like that if a guy like that is just lured by more money. And if there are, you know, this is kind of going back to the whole Omar Khan, Kevin Colbert thing. Remember when Kevin Colbert eventually needed to be called general manager just because he was being left out of league stuff? Remember, like, the Steelers, he was going to league things and he didn't have a seat in the press box because he wasn't called a general manager? Like, you know, maybe there's associations that go along with that title that a person like a Darsh or somebody like that would want. Or there's just a belief that Kyle Dubas is going to be here short term and is going to want to go to Ottawa anyway after 2 years of trying to turn this thing around if he can't do it.
Yeah, I don't think that he would come here, nor that Fenway would hire him if they thought there was a chance that it would be like a two-year thing. By the way, the Denver Nuggets won the last ever ABA championship, Tim, in 1976. It was only a seven-team league then, but somebody had to win.
Somebody had to finish fourth.
You know who they beat?
The Kentucky Colonels.
New York Nets with Dr. J.
Oh, well, there you go. That was
That's a big win because the Nets I thought the Nets had won frequently. Wait, this has to be. Oh, wait, no. I'm looking at this wrong. I'm not even sure Denver won now.
Oh, okay.
We're quibbling over. No, they did not. They were in the final, but they lost to the New York Nets.
Okay, so they got that far, and then Dr. J beat them.
Right. The New York Nets won two of the last three ABA championships.
So was Dr. J sort of like Joe Namath, the ABA becoming part of the
No, because they made him leave the Nets and go to the Sixers. So, no, no, not really.
Just Joe Namath, his 80th birthday last week sometime.
Yeah, I mean.
Tuesday or Wednesday.
Well, he did make the NFL the number one sports league in America. He made football number one. Up till then, it was baseball, boxing, horse racing. But that upset in Super Bowl III made football a household name.
And I don't know if it was a book or a Sports Illustrated article. One of the great lines about Joe Montana or Joe Namath was that he once walked into a New York club where the Rolling Stones were playing and the girls left the Stones to go see Broadway Joe.
I have no doubt about that. By the way, Tim, he always was referred to as Beaver Falls Joe as a guest on my show. Dubas is 37, and he's a career executive. Is that good? He's not some worn-out ex-player. He's done this his whole life. He's not, you know, trying to make the most of a second act and hang on in hockey. Now, I mean, there have been, obviously, many great players who were great GMs. Actually, usually not great players like Rutherford and Patrick here in Pittsburgh. But I think it's time the Penguins had a guy like this, given the situation they're in.
I think it's good in the sense that that kind of person is always going to want to do the work. I think it's good that that kind of person is always going to want to do the research. That person is going to see the value beyond just watching film and watching games and talking to guys in the room and whatnot. Like, I think they need that kind of guy. Where I do think being 37 and a non-player might come into some cloudiness, especially in Pittsburgh, is dealing with Sullivan and dealing with that room.
Yeah, and dealing with Sid.
Yeah.
But maybe that's good, too. Like, I think it's good that I would not have liked to have hired Botterill. The ex-Penguins GM, now an assistant GM, ex-Penguins assistant GM, now holding the same job in Vancouver in Seattle. Boy, that GM tree for the Penguins, Tim, it's everywhere in Seattle under Ron Francis.
He's just got an extension, by the way, too.
Right. But he would have come to Pittsburgh. There would have been all this familiarity. They would have called him Botsy the first day at the job. I don't want that. I don't want that familiarity. I think Botsy is a good hockey guy. But I'm glad that they got a boss with no previous ties.
So should we be concerned the first time Mike Sullivan drops a Dubes or a Doobie?
I assume he's Doobie, right?
I don't want to assume a Doobie for Kyle, especially if he's going to be the one in charge of making trades. Maybe we'll wind up with another Granlund if he's having too many
Doobies. By the end of November, he may need one. No, I just think that that's a good thing. I don't think his feels will ever enter into it. I don't think he'll be that concerned. I just feel like in the Hextall era, and I'm going to blame ownership too, in the salad days of FSG taking over, that everyone was walking on eggshells, thinking, wondering, hoping that the important people wouldn't get mad, the so-called important people, because I think nobody's important when you ain't won a playoff series since 2018.
And that should include Sullivan. And did your antenna go up at all like mine did when he said Sully can coach forever?
Yeah, he doesn't mean that.
Well, I know he didn't mean I wasn't going to pop up next year somewhere else besides Toronto.
Exactly. The path of least immediate resistance.
It just resonated with me very quickly that it felt like he was taking cues from Sullivan and Sid already. I was a little worried about
that. No, I don't. I think he wants the perception that it's one big happy family right off the bat. And I think, you know, in perfect circumstances, it will be. But I think he's going to do what needs to be done. Staying with that, what kind of fit will Dubas be with Sullivan? Sullivan spoke to the media earlier today, Tim. We're taping this on Friday. And said he wants speed. Gee, no kidding? You like speed? But what if Dubas can't get it?
And I think there are more basketball coaches out there that want height that can shoot three-pointers. And I think there are a lot of baseball coaches that want tons of left-handed fire-throwing pitchers, you know, and tons of power. You just don't find that. You can't just go to the hockey store and buy it.
Go get me Sandy Koufax.
Yeah. You know, like, go get me Paul Coffey.
Go get me Eric Lindros.
Yeah, you know, get me Lidstrom. You know, it's not so easy to just say, well, we need speed and we're going to go out and get it. Because
well, that did send my antenna up because I think he's determined to play his way and his way only, and that's going to get him in trouble.
I think that was said. You want to talk about messaging. I think that was a message to Dubas to please don't get Ruta and Petrie again. Please don't get Reeves. If you're going to get guys, go and get guys that might not be.
I think he should shut up and coach who he's given the way his talent dictates. I think it's finally time for that.
I also think that Dubas is more inclined to go get speed.
No question. That's his kind of hockey, too. But I'm saying what if he can't?
Then you got to make do with what you got, and making do with what you got is not trying to take Jan Rutta and Jeff Petrie and saying go out there and beat Trevor Daley and Justin Schultz. You know, because like those just speed guys, the quote-unquote just speed guys, they're harder to find now because of what the Penguins did in 16 and 17. Now other teams are finding places for them to be Carl Hagelin. Carl Hagelin, when he came here, was just a speed guy. But now a lot of teams want that kind of guy if that's the one dimension that they have.
Those five trades Jim Rutherford made with Schultz, Hagelin, Bonino, Kessel, and Daly. And there's only one big name in that group, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
But they changed the Penguins, made them winners, and revolutionized the league. It put the emphasis on speed in the whole league. For a number of years, now it's kind of trending back toward heavy.
Yeah, and they brought up guys who were like that, that were not very highly sought after or perceived to be all that important in their farm system.
Right, about guys
like Rust and Sheary.
But they fit what they were trying to do. Even a guy like Scott Wilson back then.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's another good one, yeah.
What's your take on Dubas' tenure in Toronto? Because now that he has spurned hockey's world capital and come to another place where there'll be one-tenth the pressure, but it's still a hockey town. A lot of the Leafs fans and their stooge media have their tails up about, you know, him having betrayed Toronto and not done a good job. Okay, if he didn't win in his, what was it, five, whatever years there, join the club. They haven't won for 56 years. Losing it is in their DNA. And I tend to judge Dubas' job in Toronto, Tim, by how he did in the regular season. Because the playoffs are a crapshoot, as we've learned from Moneyball. But he got 115 points 2 years ago, 111 this past season. That's more points than the Penguins had in 16 and 17, their two cup years. It's not Dubas' fault that the big four, Matthews, Marner, Nylander, and Tavares, stopped scoring in the second round.
Yeah, and to drive Fenway Sports analogy here, it's not like Joe Morgan was the only manager who never won the big one with the Red Sox.
Right.
That's it. He wasn't the only decent baseball guy that couldn't get over the curse of the Bambino. And I think you can throw a net over Dubas and kind of make the same argument about what's been going on in Toronto. You know, I think you're allowed to have a second act that's better than the first, for sure. And I think that
I think most in this job and in coaching jobs, well, not most, but very often it happens that the second act is better.
And he
probably, you learn from your mistakes.
He probably learned from some things. And actually, let's walk that back a little bit. I hope he learned from some things, and I hope that he looks at this Penguins job as an opportunity to prove that instead of an opportunity to prove his excuses right, which were Shanahan just got in the way of everything I did.
I don't know if he ever used that as an excuse, but I think that's possible that happened.
It has been positioned like that. Speaking of the Toronto media, what did you think? I've heard Yoey talk about this a couple times, whether it was on Twitter. I heard him talk about it on DVE this morning. Like, apparently the Toronto media is upset with us because we didn't ask enough of their questions. Like, they wanted us to hold his feet to the fire about why he left.
Tim, they haven't won a cup in 56 years, and they think they're the only team in town that matters. The media, they're losers, just like their team, just like their fans, just like the whole city. I do like the Hockey Hall of Fame, though.
I understand why they might have been rolling their eyes a bit at questions like, hey, weren't your times great with the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds? You know, I get that. I might have been rolling my eyes a little bit too. But everything else that was asked about for Dubas was germane to what he's going to do here in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, Toronto's old news. I mean, not just his tenure. I think the franchise is old news. And you watch now with Shanahan being the real guy in charge, which he is, even though, what's his name, how do you pronounce that, Tim?
Treliving.
Okay, who cares? He sucks. You know, it's going to become a blockhead team, an old-school Canadian blockhead team.
And I know you were joking about this, about you would have loved to have asked Tom Warner about Liverpool's midfield.
Oh, no, I wasn't joking about that.
But I wish...
John Henry, too. Where's, what, this McAllister deal? The guy from Brighton? We're never going to wrap that up? Come on.
I just wish there had been a time where you could put at least one of the two of them in beasting up there without the brand-new GM. It's like... Dubas was a shield so that they could just be there and say, hey, you had an opportunity to ask questions, but everybody wanted to get their Dubas questions in there, and there was very little time to ask Warner and Beeston about business stuff.
Tim, if I would have seen on Twitter that the McAllister acquisition fell through in the middle of that media conference, they would have had some splaining to do. What's your take on analytics and how they apply in hockey? To what degree? Everything I've read, because I've read a lot about Dubas in the past, you know, how many weeks? Because let's not forget, Tim, I said this was a good idea in March, almost 3 months ago. And he is a big believer in analytics, but it's not the be-all, end-all. He sees them as a tool, not the biggest thing.
If he truly believes that when those words come out of his mouth, that's not, again, the path of least resistance.
Well, he signed Tavares, although... I think that was probably Shanahan.
I think a lot of analytics guys say that because they know it's the right thing to say, and that's kind of been the bracketed way to explain analytics. I do wonder, though, if the sometimes very analytically inclined general managers truly believe that, or if they just go with their model at all times.
I think they probably go with their model 95% of the time. You know, Sullivan said not long ago, Tim, they need more coming up from Wilkes, which, you know, good luck with that because they have almost no prospects. And one of the ones they did have, Hallander, Sullivan chased away by blocking his way to the NHL and playing him 3 minutes a game when he did get to Pittsburgh. But you know where the analytics will show up? By the guys they stock Wilkes with, the overlooked college players, the overlooked European players, the guys that other teams haven't seen value in, that the Dubas way of analytics will. And you're not going to, you know, get like five players for your NHL team out of them, but you might get one or two decent ones like Bunning in Toronto.
Yeah, you might find the next Rust or Sheary is the more local.
And that's
way.
Okay.
That'd be great. You got to have some Kessels too, but finding the next Rust or Sheary to plug in along Sid and Gino for the last couple of years. It's, you know, so much of this, I think that's another thing where Sullivan, maybe Penguins fans fall into the trap of thinking that this team is still closer to winning a cup is because we still see 58, 71, and 87 out there, even though they're not the same players in the jerseys that they once were.
Well, yeah, but whenever I say the team's old, and it is, I'm not talking about them three. I'm talking about, you know, Petrie and Carter. I mean, like that. What's the first move you would make if you were Dubas?
I fluctuate between buying out Petrie or Granlund.
I'd buy out Granlund. I think you might still be able to trade Petrie, but I think you'd have to give away an asset to do it.
It's the value of a defenseman, I guess, that comes into play there more than what should be.
Because I know who would play in place of Petrie. Somebody else. I mean, Ty Smith, whoever. You know, break the lefty-righty, you know, commandment, you know, on one pair and get Ty Smith in there like he probably should have been last year. And I'm not saying he's going to be great. I am saying he's going to be fast.
How about preaching to Sullivan a new way of approaching the power play?
Well, yeah, we'll get to that. I have been saying now all off season, you will know if things have a chance to change. The way to fix the power play is Sidney Crosby on the right half wall. I've said that, you know, for years. And that's where he would prefer to play. That's the ironic part. Why doesn't he? He's deferring to Gino. Because God forbid Gino should know an unpleasant moment, Tim. Like, you put Crosby on that right half wall, you know what he becomes? The point man. They don't have a point man. Okay, the point man doesn't have to play up top like Gonchar did. The point man can play on the left half wall like Lemieux and Kessel did. Or on the right half wall like Jágr did. The reset point. The distribution point. That's when you'll know if things are going to change where Crosby is on that power play. Because, Tim, let me tell you, in this instance, I am right and Sullivan's wrong. And I would tell him that if he were sitting here.
By the way, the Jágr connection to the Cup Final is back. Did you see that? Barkov, another one of his former teammates. That you know that tradition?
Right.
History of every year since he first got there in 91, Jágr or someone who's played with Jágr.
A teammate,
has been in the final. Now that Barkov's there, that's been regenerated.
I'll tell you who should have had red flags go up based on what Dubas said at his introductory press conference.
Jari.
Yep. Because he started talking. I like the way Jonathan Bomboli put it from the Trib on Twitter. The voodoo of goaltending. In that Dubas said, and a lot of GMs feel this way, a lot of hockey people, it's the toughest thing to project and predict. And when he said that, I'm thinking, sayonara. He going to get somebody cheaper.
Yeah, analytics GMs don't like goaltending. I think it's part of the reason why goaltending is so muddled and homogenized now is because there are so many analytics that have made their way into hockey.
I think that's part of it. I think bad coaching is part of it. The assistants, there he does that, the VH. That was, one vertical, one horizontal. I always think of Van Halen. That's how I remember it. But and the fact that there's just not many good goalies.
And another thing that comes into play there is that analytics are supposed to be the ultimate subject objective, right?
Right.
But for goaltending, the objective is still a subjective point of view of what's a high quality,
that's right,
high danger chance. You take your perception of what's high danger and you turn that into a number, and that's one of the few analytics that front offices tend to use to evaluate goalies.
You think Jari's in or out?
I think he's out.
I think he's going to get more and longer somewhere else.
Do you think this is the first push-pull that we see between Sullivan and Dubas?
I don't think Sullivan can make a case for Jari. I don't think anybody can, not logically. Other than that, we know Jars and we trust him. How can you trust him? That's the funny part.
You can't trust him. You just know him.
He should have been out after he blew it in 21 to the Islanders in double overtime in Game 5. Should have been out.
I would have been fine with that.
Well, Tim, like I give soccer examples too much. By the way, do you watch Ted Lasso?
Yeah, we disagree on Ted Lasso.
What do you mean?
I think it's saccharine sweet.
I do too. No, I know.
It's preachy.
I am not a 1,000,000%, you know, thumbs up, but it does combine humor and saccharine sweet. You know,
The first season, right?
Like the fourth episode.
Yeah.
Like it is successfully sweet a lot of the time, which is a tough thing to do. But here's a soccer analogy to Jari. 2018. Liverpool loses in the Champions League final to Madrid. Won in 2019 over Spurs because Spurs stink. Anyway, our goaltender in that final, Loris Karius, led in a long-distance goal right through his hands, and when trying to distribute the ball, hit it off a Madrid player into his own net. Okay? And afterwards, you know, the manager Klopp and all the teammates are saying the right thing about, you know, we're 100% behind Loris, blah, blah, blah. And then Jamie Carragher, the ex-Liverpool player who's on TV, said he'll never play for the club again. He said the manager don't trust him, the players don't trust him, the fans don't trust him. This game has ruined him at Liverpool. It's an impossible situation now. Well, he never played for the club again, Tim. Not one moment. And that's what it should have been with Jari after the 21 playoffs against the Islanders.
See, I thought you were going to bring this back to Ted Lasso. I thought you could forget the believe sign that's over the doorway or anything.
No, I mean, you know what's funny, though, Tim, and don't, no spoilers, please. I'm in the fourth episode, and I can see the character arc for half the people in it. And part of it's because I understand soccer, and I know how it works over there, right? Mm-hmm. Case in point. And don't even facials that ruin this for me, Tim.
I'll just drink my iced coffee.
When I heard Jamie Tartt was alone for Manchester City, I said, well, that plays out. No question about that. Okay, Tim, let's Let's move on.
The one character I really do like in that show is Hannah Waddingham, the blonde owner.
Oh, is that her name?
Yeah, she's like a classier British Sharon Stone.
I didn't think that was her name. Is it Waddingham or Walton or?
I thought it was Waddingham. I'm pretty sure it's Waddingham.
We're talking about the owner, the female owner, right?
Female owner, yeah.
Okay,
I could watch her read the phone book.
Yeah, she's Juno Temple is hot as frig.
She's the
Keely,
yeah.
Yeah, she is hot as frig. And how can you not like
Sporty Spice?
How can you not like Roy Kent?
Yeah, he's a two-dimensional character, but
he's based on Roy Keane from Manchester United, and I hated Roy Keane. But I like Roy Kent. Anyway, Tim, let's get I got to get this in. Al Pacino's 83. He reportedly got his 29-year-old girlfriend pregnant. You buying it? You think he's the dad?
It makes for good copy. I'm pretty sure he doesn't want to believe that. He's certainly acting like he doesn't want to believe that. When he asked the current girlfriend to go out and get the paternity test, it's pretty clear he wants to back out of this. But at the same time, at 83, I'm sure he's still with enough to calculate, it makes me look good.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, Waddingham. See, Hannah Waddingham.
Okay, you know, with all the English accents, you need subtitles.
I started watching that show on the treadmill, so I always have whenever
I am watching it on the treadmill.
Yeah, I always have the subtitles on. I did that for Succession too, even though that's completely English, except for Logan. He had a little bit of an accent.
It's not even a week. I miss Succession. I miss looking forward to Succession.
Yes, did you like the Penguins? See, here's another little tie-in with the Penguins here to Succession. You see the tweet that they put out where it was Tom putting the sticker on the forehead?
On Greg's head.
Yeah, but they put Kyle Dubas' face in for Greg, and it just says, we got him.
I'm not sure that's real flattering to Kyle Dubas.
Exactly, for multiple reasons, because A, I don't think you want to make Kyle Dubas out to be Greg. And B,
I don't want to make Greg my president of hockey operations.
Who's Tom exactly? Is Tom Werner or is Tom Mike Sullivan? Because it certainly felt like Mike Sullivan.
And who's the quad?
That's right. Yes.
I would assume the quad is Sully, Sid, Dubas, and
Gino?
Jen Bellano, who got put over big. How
my
about
gosh,
that?
Gosh, yes.
Yeah, she has more power than ever.
She will wind up working for the city now.
Now, I want to talk about the Steelers a little bit.
Is Dubas living in Newcastle?
That's what I hear. I believe in Jen's old place that she grew up in. Connor Hayward, the Steelers have four tight ends. Mm-hmm. He talked how they could all end up on the field at the same time. We hear that they might use two running backs in some sets with Warren and Harris. Are they ever going to throw the ball? Are they trying to coach back into the 70s?
What's the phrase that you so often use for Steeler fans in situations like that? Positively tumescent. Oh, all the tight ends, all the running backs at the same time.
But I mean, well, you know a phrase I use too. Colin Coward says that some teams in the NFL, particularly those that have defensive-minded head coaches, just don't get where offense is in the league right now. The Steelers are one of those. When I hear stuff like Harris and Warren in the same backfield, it makes me realize, A, how hot a touch they are, and B, maybe they don't have as much faith in Kenny Pickett in his second year as they should.
The second part I lean to more in the sense that when you hear teams talk about maturation of a quarterback, opening up a playbook, becoming more explosive, it normally lends itself to more three wide, more shotgun, more having the quarterback call the plays at the line of scrimmage. Kind of like what we saw with Ben as he evolved through 2007, 8, 9, 10, 11, etc. I think their idea of being more explosive is beating the hell out of people on first down, getting to second and three, and taking shots on second and three. That's how they define explosive.
That's how I define out of touch. That's not how the game is. And I think it does show lack of faith in Pickett. I want Pickett, not being careful. I want him reaching for his ceiling, not settling for safe. Because if he's ever going to be a guy who could beat Joe Burrow enough to win a division or win a playoff game against the Bengals or a team and quarterback like that, that second and seven stuff, second and three stuff, that ain't where it is.
That's obviously the way they're leaning, though, because they went out and got two guards and they drafted an offensive tackle.
No. It is definitely the way they're leaning. I just don't think it's going to work. And it really does not cast a good light on Pickett, no matter what their intent is in that regard.
And the guys that they did get who will play skill positions for them are primarily guys who are going to help in the red zone once they get there. You know, like Allen Robinson, Washington. Those are the guys that they got that can help Kenny Pickett turn these long, plodding, arduous drives that they went on last year.
It's not a league of long, plodding, arduous drives. I keep coming back to when they lost to Philadelphia last year by, you know, a route. I forget what exactly the score was. And the Steelers had the ball 34 minutes, and they lost by double digits, more than 20, and the Eagles scored four touchdowns before they ever ran a play in the red zone. That's what the league is now.
Do you have any concern, speaking of that Eagles game, because you brought up the Eagles game, that kind of ties in with something I'm writing next week about the secondary for the Steelers. We always talk about the offensive line and the continuity and the chemistry. The other position where we talk about that a lot is secondary. Last year, I think they got burned a bunch in the secondary just because they didn't have enough good guys. I think they have some better guys now. They have more good guys. But I don't know if they are going to know what the other one's doing a lot of the time. I'm a little worried about that.
Well, I love OTAs, by the way. The media can't report what they see. They can report what the players say happened.
But you can't ask them directly to say what you want them to say. You've got to backdoor it so they burp it out at you.
You can take photos occasionally and post them. Tim, it's the worst level of secrecy / censorship that I've ever seen. It's incompetent.
What I would love to see for a team that's well established, like, you know what would be funny is if Andy Reid, if every team operates the same way the Steelers do, and I don't know if they do. I think there are general rules that most media relations departments have team to team. I would love for, like, Andy Reid and the Chiefs this year at their first OTA to have come out and run the wishbone and just kind of tell the players this is what's going on. Just watch the sweat pour off the Kansas City media. How do I say this without saying it?
Want to know what I would do? I would start a Twitter site, okay, anonymous, and I would pay one of the stooge media at the facility to tell me exactly what happens at OTAs and then tweet everything, every little detail out anonymously.
What would that be worth to you? Just information-wise, you're thinking?
No, that would just be worth it to me to aggravate the bejesus out of the Steelers. Like, say, Tim, say, you know, I'm not hypothetically, like, what if you were a guy, you had a big radio gig, you got demoted, you're like a roving reporter, you needed extra cash. I mean, maybe you could make a little extra coin until your career expires.
Are you suggesting
in
this
January.
Is a way to bridge the gap between you guys? Is that a business offer that
I'm
you're
not
making?
Talking about anybody in particular.
Is this sort of a succession deal?
This is hypothetical.
Is this a green sticker in your
maybe,
head?
Maybe hypodermic. I don't know. That is Tim Benz. Al Pacino, if you're out there, I don't know what to say. Thank you for listening to Mark and Tim. This is the Bet Rivers Podcast Network. Bet now from, wait for it, anywhere.
Catch new episodes of Mark Madden Unfiltered every week. Available on the Bet Rivers Network, BetRivers.com, and wherever you find your podcasts.